Hello, this is Kansas Wrestling Coaches Association President and Seaman High School Head Wrestling Coach Patrick Kelly. Welcome to the KWCA podcast featuring the new class of Hall of Fame inductees. In today's show, we'll be visiting with David Ray. Ray will be part of the 2016 KWCA Hall of Fame class that also includes Dennis Charbonneau and Delbert Erickson. The induction ceremony will take place on October 8th in conjunction with our fall clinic in Salina. We could probably argue all day about who the top wrestlers in the history of the state of Kansas are. I'm sure Melvin Douglas, Eric Aiken, and Tyler Caldwell would earn several votes, but also in the mix would be David Ray, one of this year's Kansas Wrestling Coaches Association Hall of Fame inductees. Ray earned three state championships, two for Bishop Carroll High School as a sophomore and junior, and for Goddard High School as a senior after finishing third at Goddard as a freshman. He represented on the national stage as well, earning two national titles in Greco at the Junior Nationals and added a runner-up and fifth-place finish in freestyle. He signed to wrestle for Dan Gable and the Iowa Hawkeyes out of high school. After struggling to make the lineup, Ray transferred to Edinburgh University in Pennsylvania for his senior season. The Fighting Scots were coached by former Hawkeye great Mike Deanna and assisted by Bruce Bumgardner, one of the all-time greats in U.S. wrestling history. At the time, Deanna's program was the recipient of several top wrestlers who had difficulty cracking the Hawkeye lineup. Ray made the most of the move. Edinburgh is a Division I school now, but was in NCAA Division II at that time. During that era, 15 athletes were selected from the D2 and D3 national championships to participate in the NCAA Division I national tournament. Ray was runner-up in the D2 tournament, which qualified him for the D1 tournament, which was held at Carver Hawkeye Arena in Iowa City in March of 1986. Ray had a good season and finished with a 37-7 record, but entered the D1 tournament unseeded. He must have failed to read the memo as he finished in third place to put an exclamation point on an already salvaged career. He was part of the NCAA Division I National Championship team each year while at Iowa, and was part of the D2 National Runner-Up team during his senior season at Edinburgh. During his days at Iowa, Ray continued to compete in Greco. He finished in fourth place in the 1982 and 83 U.S. Opens and was also a fourth place finisher at the 1984 Olympic Trials. After college, he completed a few coaching stints, most notably at Montana State Northern, where he brought the school four NAIA national championships. Ray is now retired from coaching and resides in Montana. On the line with us today is David Ray. Welcome to the program and congratulations on your Hall of Fame nomination. It's a real honor to speak with you today. I'd like to start off by asking you how you got introduced to the sport of wrestling and how you account for your early success.
Well, thank you, Pat. First of all, I'd like to thank Kansas, the Hall of Fame committee to nominate me. It's a real honor. When you're in coaching, you don't ever expect any kind of awards or any kind of pats on the back. You do it for the student. And so this is nice, especially as you get older. And to the question, I got into wrestling because my older brothers, they wrestled. My brother Ricky, he wrestled at Goddard. And actually, the high school coach, Tony Hager, he saw him running around in class. He grabbed him one day in class and says, "You're coming out for wrestling." My dad wasn't big in sports. He believed that when you go to school and after you get out of school, you go to work. So they were kind of hiding it from him for a while. And then my dad went to the first match and he fell in love with it and loved it. But we moved from there and moved to, then my other brother, Billy, he went out as a freshman. So they were sophomore and freshman in high school, Goddard. Then I think it was one more year there. Then we transferred and went to Missouri and Springfield. And they both wrestled at Parkview High School there.
Okay.
And they did very well. But we were only there for about 2 years, and then we came back to Goddard. And I think my brother Billy was that time when he was a junior. So he only wrestled 1 year at Goddard, then 2 years in Missouri, then back at Goddard as senior or as junior, senior, something like that. I'm not 100% sure. But I used to watch them wrestle, and every time they said we go to tournaments, how it is, your kids are always running around behind the mats, and they said I was always, I don't remember, but they said I was always wrestling around with the other kids and doing stuff. And that was about it. When we came back to Goddard, I was in sixth grade, and Goddard didn't have a wrestling club, and they just started a brand-new wrestling Club, and Steve Blasey, one of the former wrestlers at Goddard, was the coach, and I loved it. That competing was natural for me, and wanting to know the difference to winning and losing in sixth grade was huge. My second match, in fact, that first year, I got pinned. And, boy, that was embarrassing to me. I don't know, but I felt like everybody saw me. And it was neat, and I went on that year, and I did pretty well. I ended up taking third at regionals, and the kid that beat me at regionals, I beat at state. But I took second at state, and then we went to the kids' nationals, which were held at Wichita State, and I beat that kid at nationals for the championship. So it was just, young, being new, you just get better all the time. So I was very fortunate.
So you certainly did have some early success there, it sounds like.
Yes, winning the kids' national, I remember grabbing that, having that medal, even going home and after Wichita State and going home and sitting in the children, taking my shoes and stuff off, and sitting on the floor and looking at that medal thinking, I can't believe it. You know, just, something that you try to work for, but you had no idea because I first year wrestling, I didn't know what the ultimate is at that time, and that right there. And sixth grade, that was the ultimate to achieve.
Fast forward your freshman season at Goddard. So you finished third, and do I understand that was your only loss of the year was at state?
Yes, it was in the semis against Kurt Hahn from Norton. And you remember it very well. They had the scoreboard right above your head, and I just remember I was keeping the score, and I got kind of bloody nose. There was only like 13 seconds left or something. I asked the white mother, the referee said, no, get back in. And I was thinking the score was tied. I was ahead by one. Anyway, he was coming. I tried shooting, and he did a shuck by, came around. I set out, and the referee goes, two. And I thought, whatever, you lose your hate it all the time. But then when you found out you was ahead and everything, then you're really upset with yourself again. You know, it's being a freshman, too.
Oh,
and
sure.
You make mistakes, but you know what? That's probably good for me. But that was my only loss right there, yep, of that state and my semis there.
So talk about you then transferred to Bishop Carroll and then back to Goddard for your senior year. Talk about the journey that, you know, with your next three state titles and how all that unfolded.
Well, I went after Goddard that year. Tony Hager, the coach that started the program at Goddard back in the, right around 1970, he left and went to Indiana. Anyway, he was at Bishop Carroll. And we kind of knew him in the family. And so we contacted him, and they just took second in state, I think, like the year before. So they had a lot more wrestlers in the room. It was, I would really probably say this, wrestling was important in Goddard, but Goddard was on a downside, not as many people were involved or in it. And as athletes, which we could have been. I mean, the middle school we'd have 7th, 8th grade for Dan Jungro in the middle school. He'd have 70, 75 kids out every year for those two grades.
Wow.
But some reason, when they got in 9th grade, nobody go out. They'd rather go work, make money, you know, have a vehicle. And as you know, as a coach, in high school, you got to recruit those athletes. You just can't depend on them to come out and think, oh, they're going to come out as they wrestle. You've got to be active in recruiting them and talk, because there is other things that are more, maybe that change people's hearts, but you can still make it exciting. And you have to recruit when they get out of 8th grade and they come up there. And there was 35 boys that were wrestling in middle school in 8th grade. Only that grade only. You can have at least a goal for yourself and try to recruit some of them. And, you know, the coach there at that time didn't understand all that. And I went to Bishop Carroll, and it was fun. For sophomore year, just to work out. I had a good workout partner. I still have those friends at Goddard, but I'd say, the workout partners probably, I would say they were, I had more quality workout partners at that time.
Okay.
And stay there my junior year too. But at my junior year, the high school coach decided he was going to leave. He's still, Tony Hager, he's what, 73, 74 coming up this September, but I still talk to him all the time, and he always says he regrets he should have stayed another year. and let me finish it out there. But when he decided to leave, I said, oh, you know, I'm going to go back to Goddard. I had friends I still talk to there, and so I went back to Goddard. But it seems like in high school, people make moving or going to different schools a big deal. But when I look back, it wasn't a big deal. And I did it. It wasn't no one else's choice but my own personal choice, not my parents. They didn't have any influence in it at all. They weren't involved with, I mean, they were involved. They said, do what you want to do, but they weren't sitting there telling me what to do.
Never. Yeah, I imagine there were a few eyebrows raised at the time, especially at the time. You know, it's a little bit more common for that sort of thing to take place now. But I'm sure, especially with your, you know, with your level of performance, it probably did. Few people did probably question that, I imagine.
Well, I was thinking about Cape and Mount Carmel, but if you knew, you wouldn't have known at that time. Cape and was coached by Dwayne Miller, and everybody accused him of recruiting all the time. I mean, Roy Osier, four-time, you know, he's in it, and he's a four-time state. He was at Goddard, and he went to Capon.
Okay.
And right before, all through grade school, up through eighth grade, and all of a sudden, he ended up over there. Well, everybody was accusing them of recruiting, but, you know, it was real naked from that standpoint. But they weren't recruiting. Maybe they were offering up their school and their academics and their program, but you know what? They were the best in the state. They won the Grand State, you know, both years they had it. They're at Hayes, 74, a little 3A school. They were, Dwayne Miller was originally from Oklahoma and everything, and he came and started a program. Was at Douglas, and then he went over to Capon.
Sure, in fact, he was a NCAA champion for Oklahoma.
He was just a competitor, and everybody was jealous of him. You know, when you're a kid like I was in school, and everybody was talking negative, well, you don't know any better because you're too young to realize. A lot of times when people are talking negative about someone, they're jealous. And
so you feel the recruiting was really just the success that recruited and drew people to his program is kind of what you're saying?
Well, that too. But they did call people up and say, hey, you want to come to school here? I don't know how it ended up, but I'm sure I went over to Dwayne Mill, over to Cape, and as a coach. Well, Dwayne was retired. He came back into it in that year or whatever. And so he and I were, I was assistant for him, and it was a great experience working with him. I mean, he's, you know, from one side and getting to that side, and years later, it was fun.
So you finished up then with three state titles and a state third place finish. You also were heavily involved in the summer programs with Freestyle and Greco. You were a two-time national champion at the junior national level and also a freestyle finalist and fifth-place finisher. How did you – who pushed you to get involved in the summer? And tell us a little bit about, you know, what now we just call Fargo was in Iowa City at the time and then, of course, moved to Cedar Falls. But tell us a little bit about that and what kind of exposure – that allowed you to get by participating in the summer at a high level?
Well, that first year when I started wrestling in my sixth grade, they had some summer freestyle tournaments. I remember going out to Scott City and a few others, but that one really stands out, Scott City. But the thing is, it was my brother wrestled in it because he's getting better, and I would give credit to probably Brett and Brad Means, and Bobby was at it, their younger brother. But they knew about, coming from Oklahoma, they knew that that's what people did in the summer. They go, and we needed to get, the reason we went to that was freestyle. And remember, we wrestled folk style all year, even the regionals and state, and then all of a sudden the kids' nationals is freestyle. And so I never wrestled freestyle, and that was the first tournament. So I had to go. We wrestled that one. That's why I remember that was my first freestyle tournament. And I liked it. I thought, wow, this is a lot different. And I didn't wrestle any different. I really didn't know much about how to roll through front headlocks, things like that, or gut wrenches or anything. But it was just the scoring, the way you wrestled was a little bit different technically. You know, I went to seventh grade. I'd wrestle for Goddard, and the most you could have that year would be 10 matches. You'd wrestle seven duels in a tournament where you'd have three matches. You'd have 10 matches for the whole season. And then I'd go right into freestyle. I'd go whatever tournaments are around, and remember, there was a couple of folk styles still, and then I'd wrestle in the regionals in the state, which both folk style, and they usually were done. They're done in March or something like that, and Does that sound about right, Mark?
Yeah, yes, that's right. That's still the current schedule, and they're talking about changing that up a little bit to allow for more freestyle and Greco. One of the reasons, anyway. But yeah, that's an interesting, how that all operated back then.
Well, then you'd wait until June. Usually, the nationals for the kids, nationals were the middle of June, June 13th, something like that. And so, it allowed us a lot of time to wrestle freestyle. We'd started going to other tournaments, a few more, and Kansas was doing really well back then. People don't even realize we were number two in the nation with the number enrollment of kids in the kids' programs. Wow. We were number two in the nation back then. We had so many kids are wrestling, and we were big. USWF, whatever. United States Wrestling Federation. We didn't compete with AAU at all. Where Iowa was going, I mean, we'd come up there and, God, you guys, AAU was big, USWF, and they were fighting back and forth who was controller. And Montana, they still are, even today. You got AAU and this, and they have their own state tournament still, and some people want us to vote, but they don't have the support. And just the USWF, whatever we call it now, it's stronger, but they still divide. Some won't do the other one. Then high school started, and I started doing more freestyle. And I really would say my freshman year in high school. After that, I remember I used to go. Kansas had a tournament every weekend. Starting, I'd always start with the Ponca City tournament. This is the first one. I went to Kansas, and we'd have one. Newton would have one. Capen would have one. You'd go up to Santa Fe Trail, they'd have one. You'd go to. For St. Francis, clear the northwest corner. I went to that tournament two times there in high school. And clear out there, we'd go to Beloit every year. Beloit had a big freestyle tournament every year. And you go that one. Then you go to Scott City. Those are the ones that really, Douglas would have one. So you'd always remember. But I think really what, honest, in eighth grade year, I wrestled in the high school state freestyle tournament to qualify for Fargo. And I I thought, well, I'm going to wrestle in it. I wrestled 105.5 and made to the finals. And you know who had to wrestle in the finals? He's a Hall of Famer, too. He was a senior, and I wrestled Brad Frederickson. And
now I have to interject. When you say, it's funny you said Fargo, but at the time it was Iowa City that you were qualifying for, correct?
It was Iowa City. Everything was in Iowa City, and it was hot, and it was Iowa City Junior Nationals. So that qualified for Iowa City Junior Nationals, and I wrestled him, and he beat me 8-5, and he was a state champ that year, and later, he just thought he should have beat me a lot worse, being an 8th grader, going to be in 9th grade, and then I found out, I didn't even pay attention. I didn't know who he was. I didn't know he was a state champ. When you're a kid, you don't care. But I didn't go to Junior Nationals that year because Brett Means, there's another thing you hit Brett with. He'd sit there and tell me, it's really tough. You won't even do anything there. It's super tough.
And I'll interject again here. Brett Means you're talking about is the current Goddard coach has that powerful program down at Goddard right now, and that's who kind of gave you a little bit of your start, it sounds like.
Well, Brett, like I said, the Means went, Brett, that was Brett, Brad and Bobby, and their parents were Bob and Lynn, and they were at Goddard, and they moved up from Oklahoma, and they wanted a club for their son, Bobby, so they're the ones that initiated this program. But I would say Brett probably was a pretty big influence. I mean, I know he was. For me, learning technique, little things. Brett was a very good technician, and he liked sharing his knowledge with kids all the time to help people become better. But, took third in Polk South State, and, you're pretty disappointed. You didn't win it all. So it was right away. Wrestled a lot of freestyle tournaments every week, and I'd end up probably wrestling at that year probably at 5-6 freestyle tournaments at least. I can't remember. In the years after that, I can, but 5 or 6 probably at least, maybe a couple more. And wrestling the state freestyle. Again, I wrestled at, I think that year was 14.5, and it was at Douglas, and I won it. The year before when I was 8th grade, it was at Douglas, and that year was at Douglas, and I won it. But we go to Junior Nationals in Iowa City, And it was my first time there, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, look at this thing, this big old. And if you've been in the old gym, they had the old field house. Then you had the armory built on the back for the ROTC program. They'd have all those 18 mats or whatever it was. Back then, I think it was only like 12, maybe 6 and 6. They only had high school level, one level. It might have been 14, 7 and 7 on each side. But it was like, wow. And my first match, I lost. And I, that Billman, the guy I beat in my state breakup, he had us, so that kid and beat him. Well, then I realized what how mental it was. And, but I, won my next two matches, and my fourth match, I got beat by the guy, I think he took second that year, and that was Mark Trezino from Illinois, who wrestled at Iowa, and we had been teammates later. We didn't even know each other. He was a couple years older than I was. That was an experience, and it was like, you know, all right. Next year, sophomore year comes around. Wayne State, go wrestled in a lot more freestyle that summer. I think I ended up having close to between my freshman and between my sophomore and my junior year. I know I had at least 70 freestyle matches in the summer. Wow. And counting Fargo. That's not counting high school. But you know, so if I had 30 matches, you know, I had 100 matches about that year, count that. And I would, you know, all this time is going on, I would practice. I'd call up my friends from Goddard or whatever, or my other teammates, and my dad bought a mat, a little 24 by 24 mat, and we had it around, and I would call up my friends, and I'd say, hey, you want to come and wrestle, practice at time? So I would call and arrange it all the time, and they'd find a way over, and we'd work out for an hour or two or to make arrangements. But, you know, there might be anywhere from sometimes two of us to seven or eight of us. But I went back to Fargo. I won the Kids Nash, the Kids State. That was at taping that year. And I don't even know who I wrestled. And then they went to Iowa City for Junior Nationals. I ended up taking fifth. I ended up wrestling Leo Bailey one match. Sure. And he from Oklahoma. He won both styles that year. He just won Greco's. And he was in freestyle, and we had to wrestle. And the match was the score being like 12-11, 11-10, or 10-9. It was a one-point match. Losing. And I remember after that, I had a hard – that was my first loss. I won like eight and lost. But back then, you know, it was just you'd have tons of matches. You'd have nine. Usually a guy in the finals might have 10 or 11 matches to get to the finals. Because mm-hmm. you broke them up in pools, and you'd wrestle seven or eight matches on your side, then you'd wrestle a semifinal match, and then a final match. So you had two matches, they'd narrow it down to the top two on each side. I don't know if you remember those days.
Oh, sure, I remember those days. In fact, they just went to line bracketing. I believe this was the third year in Fargo, or maybe even the second. So, yeah, that was the situation for the history of the Junior Nationals, sure.
Junior Nationals. See, I saw that the other day, and last year and this year, I didn't realize that. God, I wonder how long they've been doing this. But, you know, you see some of those guys are only having 5 to 7 matches now. I thought, wow, that makes a big difference.
Oh, it makes a big difference, yeah. So right, the finalists now are going to have more like, you know, 5-6 matches. And yeah, well, back then it was, you're right. I mean, it was
9-11.
Right, sure. Yep.
So I went to, anyway, after I got beat by Bailey, I wrestled this kid from Ohio, and I can't remember his name, but he was recruited highly, and that's the first time I ever knew what really a full Nelson was, and I had my head down, and put me a full Nelson and pinned me. And after losing to Bailey, and then losing that one, I was pretty. But it was by marks how many matches I went, so I ended up finishing fifth. Okay. I think it was fifth, I don't know, maybe it was sixth. All right, fifth, I'm pretty sure. So I ended up finishing there, and then I... you know, you're disappointed how you finish. And so I was a sophomore. And so the next year, you go back to Carroll, Wayne State, and it was all about going to the Junior Nationals in Iowa City. And
you know, I have to interject at this point. It's really kind of funny hearing you say Fargo and meaning Iowa City, because right now, you know, they're in the process of last year on the contract, and it's been in Fargo for 25 years. And they may lose it. And the joke is, you know, if they do move it to somewhere else, are they still going to call it Fargo? And that's kind of what's happening here with you. Is it becomes not only a place, but the generic name for the tournament, right? I tell Fargo. People that I competed in Fargo, but it was in Cedar Falls at the time. You know, and it's right. A little confusing to the non-initiated, but that's it's just what it's become, what it's morphed over the years.
you know, talking about junior nationals, well, after my sophomore year, I knew that, and everybody talked, that was the tournament everybody talked about.
Well, so you see, you placed fifth as a sophomore summer, and then you exploded after that and you know, won your two Greco titles as a junior and senior. But did you not get injured your senior year in freestyle and not place?
Yep. I remember it was probably April. I was wrestling Greg Unruh. He was a couple of weights bigger, larger than I am. And we wrestled upper body. Boy, he hip tossed me, and I landed right on my right shoulder. And I got that burning sensation and through your body and tingling and hurt. I kept trying to wrestle a little bit after that. Thought I'd be okay, but get worse. And anyway, then I got an AC separation up there. But then it was nothing. So I remember, I think Ken Coover at that time was in charge of the kids. He was the state representative for the kids program, and I had to call him up and ask for a
medical waiver or
waiver. I had to ask for a waiver not to go to the state high school state freestyle tournament to qualify for junior nationals, and. They granted it to me, and so that way I could still wrestle in the Greco and still wrestle in freestyle. That's how they usually took the top four at each weight. If you didn't wrestle in it, that, their rule of thumb is you didn't wrestle in it, you couldn't go. So that senior, I got hurt, so I got the waiver, and then you know, a couple of years there, we went up, and that was when Bennett was the big into the kids nationals too.
Ben, he
was
Ben like Bennett from Junction.
Junction City. And he was in it, and we went up to, there was a camp up by Junction City, a camp, outdoors camp. They had covered wagons, then they had tents or teepees, and then they had some other kind of cabin things. But all the kids, we'd stay in there and practice 1 week before we went to the kids' nationals. And then for Fargo, I'm trying to think, we really didn't have much of a training camp, as I remember. But I remember my senior year, it was at Leavenworth. And that was a good training camp there, and we conditioned, but I couldn't do anything. And so they sit there, so we were trying to save it, and they wrapped this wrap around my chest, around that shoulder and everything, try to keep it. But as soon as I try to wrestle and sprawl, you'd rip that tape or whatever right off. It's amazing, your body, it matter. When you got to resist the wrestling, things break pretty easy. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't really wrestle any, just tried to do some drilling, and did very little wrestling. It's more like weight cutting that whole senior year, that March all the way through. And got to Fargo, won Greco, beat Jira, and then I wrestled that first freestyle, and I did a high crotch. Well, you couldn't do high crotches, you know. All of a sudden, my first match, I did a high crotch, throwing a guy over, and man, it pulled on that shoulder and just kind of ripped in him. And made it worse. I just wrestled, like, I think I had 9 matches or 10 in Greco. And then I went to that, wrestled that one and won it. And then I just withdrew. Because it was one of those things, it was always painful throughout the whole thing. It just needed rest.
I see.
And just like my junior year in Iowa City, Pat, that year I had 9 in freestyle and 10 in Greco. I had 19 matches. And back then you overlapped. You'd wrestle the Tuesday, what was it? You'd wrestle Wednesday, Thursday, Greco. And after you're done with Greco, winning knit racket two, that night they do 2 rounds of freestyle, depending on the side of the brackets.
Is that right? Wow.
I even had so you'd 4 days. So in those time, I had 4 days. I had that Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I had 19 matches in those 4 days. It was a great experience. I mean, and I knew, like you're asking, what was the importance? Everybody knew junior nationals were your door to be recruited.
All right, well, let's move on to that. That's an interesting segue there. So I remember of knowing of the name David Ray when I was an impressionable junior high wrestler in rural north central Iowa in the early 80s. And I followed your competitive, and I have followed your competitive coaching career as well through the years. So after you were, you know, a 3-time state champion, 4-time state medalist, you elevated your stock by competing in freestyle and Greco. And ironically, I was recently sorting through my old wrestling magazines, and I came across the fall of 1980 issue of The Young Wrestler, which was an offshoot of the more well-known Amateur Wrestling News. And they had a feature on the Junior Nationals in Iowa City. which is, again, the current event simply that we know as Fargo. It included a picture of you wrestling Joe Gibbons in the freestyle finals. And what a tournament that was. And like you say, the big namers were there. So lots of big namers involved that year, from Bill Scheer to Kevin Darkus, Kenny Monday. You mentioned John Jira that you had in the finals of Greco that went on to wrestle at University of Wisconsin. And ironically, Kenny Monday was beat in the finals that year by Bill Moss of Florida. He wrestled at Iowa State for a short time, as I recall.
I watched that.
Is that right? Wow, I believe it was a Criteria 6-6 kind of match. But the article by Hall of Fame writer Ron Good was the title of the article was Darkus Moss Had 10th Iowa City Juniors. So when did you know that you wanted to continue competing on the college level?
It was my seventh grade year. After my second year of wrestling, I was my junior high coach, Dan Jingro, who I still have a very strong relationship with we talk often. And he was very influential in my life, and not only from a coaching standpoint, but from a standpoint of what kind of person you should be and kind of ethics and morals and values. But he sit there. He's the same age as Gable, which, in case anybody wants to know, Gable will be 68 this October 25th, and Dan will be 68 this August. But he told me, he was talking, and Gable was, a legend. And I didn't know anything about Gable. I was just my second year of wrestling. Nobody ever talked, and he talked about him. And so this is probably right around 76. And so 4 years after the Olympics, and the 72 Olympics. So he would talk to him, and I'd talk about him and say things. And I knew I loved this sport, and I just wanted to keep doing it. At seventh grade, you think, well, I want to do this the rest of my life, and that's all I want to do. So it went from there. And then in eighth grade, I had there, and we talked a little more about coach, colleges, wrestling a little bit. But it was more about then. And so I would say, really, I didn't know much, but I just knew I wanted to continue on. And I'd say Dan Jingro, he really kind of talked about the other levels and stuff. And I knew my brothers. Remember when I wrestled that first year? And my second year, I think it might have been Brett Means was a senior. My brother was they all went to LeBec Community College. And so I knew there was colleges, so there was wrestling after high school. So I learned that right away. So I knew there was wrestling after high school because these guys went to college. So that made it kind of like, once you're done with high school, that means you go to college and wrestle.
So you ended up signing with the University of Iowa out of high school. What other schools were you considering?
It really came down to Iowa and Oklahoma State. And it's amazing during recruiting all through. And to be honest, I'd never heard from anybody really until, remember Fargo when I won both, I was in the finals in both styles?
Sure. Right.
It wasn't, I was second and first after my junior. It wasn't a week after I got back, I had a letter from Iowa and one from Oklahoma State. I just knew, I narrowed it down to them two. And I didn't know which one. And the recruiting trip to both places, I think, is probably what sold it. Both of them were very good, but I was a lot. I mean, you hung out with more of the student athletes. I had a lot more. There was a lot more team unity there than I saw at Oklahoma State by far.
Talk about so you signed with Iowa. You got there in the fall. Talk about the process of your time at Iowa and then the circumstances surrounding your transfer from Iowa to Edinburgh.
Well, that's easy. I went to Iowa, had great workout partners. Jeff Kerber was starting at 134, and I was expecting a redshirt with like the rest of my teammates who were incoming freshmen that year.
And Jeff Kerber was a couple-time All-American at Iowa, and he was a four-time state champion in the state of Iowa.
Yeah, from Emmitsburg. And so I ended up wrestling and some matches, and I remember wrestling out, but I traveled with the team to the West Coast that year. We wrestled Arizona State, and then we wrestled Bakersfield and Cal Poly. I wrestled against Bakersfield, and I got beat 5-0. I come off the mat, And I sit down, and Gable sits next to me. And I swear to you, here's exactly what he said. I can't forget it. David, to him, he goes, I don't think I've ever had a wrestler wrestle for me and not score a point. And you knew Gable and his psychology. So he said that, and I thought, I'm the worthless piece of crap ever. I can't believe I'm the first guy. Before I step on the mat, Gable and Jay Robson come up to me, and they said, this kid's a freshman. He's about 500. You shouldn't have a problem with him. That's what they told me. I said, okay. So I went out there, and I remember wrestling, hitting an arm throw for some reason. The guy does a cartwheel across one hit, across one shoulder, across his head, another one. I didn't get anything, but he just kind of flew across, tied cartwheel, and went off the mat. Well, I tell you what, imagine this, Pat. All of a sudden, you see Lou Bannick, Ed Bannick, and Jim Zalesky, all three rush to the edge of the mat with their arms flexed in the air, yelling, yeah, and screaming. And I'm like, I look over at them, and I can still see them. They look so lean. And I mean, their faces and the intensity out of them and that support, right? I mean, seeing those guys. And I ended up winning the match. I don't know what score it was, 9-5, 9-6. I ended up winning it. And that was it. Nothing else happened. Huh. End of the year, I'm looking at the All-Americans. Ferber took six that year. Guess who took seven? The guy from Cal Poly. Wow. He wasn't a freshman. Guess what he was? He was a senior. And the guy that I lost to Bakersfield that night before, he already beat him three. He beat him three or four times that year. Never beat him every time. Three or four. He already beat him twice. It's funny what he told me the night before on the bench and then the next night. But the thing also I learned a lot from that. And at the end of the year, that at first, I'm still end of the year freshman. I'm thinking, God, those guys just lied to me because they were. I knew why. They were just in their tips so I wouldn't get psyched out. And they're right. It's a minute when you're a freshman, you come and wrestling that level, and you got all those other guys around your team that are this good. And you think, you know, you doubt. You know, I was from Kansas. I had some doubt. And didn't realize, you know, you don't need doubt. You know, I'll tell you what, right now, I tell everybody, to be honest, in college, in high school, I was very disciplined. My social life was wrestling. And when I went to college, my social life changed. And I was very undisciplined. I was, maturity-wise, I was being very immature. And I didn't like alcohol or anything like that. But, you know, I thought, well, I'll try it and stuff, and it affected my academics. It affected my performances and, you know, everything. So, and I don't have a hard time admitting it because there's no one else's fault for my failure not reaching my goals. It was all my fault. Not Gables, it's not Jay's, it's not Iowa. And I had a girlfriend, and she got pregnant, and so I decided, you know, my senior year, Randall was at my weight. Greg Randall, who was a three-time All-American, and I, a two-time finalist, I thought, what I'm going to do is I'm going to transfer. And I went to Edinburgh. The only thing I want to do is wrestle in the Division I tournament. In my mind, I thought, I'm going to be there, but I got to go to a school where I can get there. That was my goal. I went to Edinburgh because Mike Deanna, the head coach, was a four-time Big Ten champ from Ohio, but his roots were Iowa. He went to Iowa. And the assistant there was Bruce Bumgarner, on his staff. And the year before I went there, two Iowa guys, Mike Hassey and Matt Fury, on our team, same year that I left, already transferred there. And they both were Division II national champs. And Bob Kaufman, who's from Emmitsburg, too, two-time champ, or one-time state champ, but he decided he would go with me, too. So we both, we go back to Iowa. You know, my social life was interfering. And there was other years I was thinking I needed to leave Iowa. It wasn't because anything, but I knew it was better for me because I needed a different environment so I'd be more disciplined. And it was hard to leave Iowa. It's very difficult to leave because you got that camaraderie. You had great workout partners. I tell people all the time, maybe I didn't go to the National Division I as much as I liked them. But I've never been a better wrestler because I was working out Randy Lewis all the time and other wrestlers. So I had some of the best workout partners there could have been in the country. Barry Davis, Randy Lewis, you had Lenny Zaleski, which I went a couple of times because he was a little older and very tough. But you had Trezino, you had many guys around that were very tough to work out with.
I was at that 1986 tournament in Iowa City watching as a sophomore in high school. And somehow my high school coach, Al DeLeon, got me a floor pass, so I spent much of that event up close and personal with the competitors. That tournament remains one of the most memorable wrestling experiences of my life. Iowa won the team title when they recorded a record at the time, 158 team points, which they actually broke in 1997, and they finished with 8 All-Americans, 5 of which were national champions. The theme for the home team that year was Ninth Crown in Our Town, and it was all over the billboards all over town in the hotels and restaurants and such. And the Hawks answered the bell. The environment in that arena was electric. There were upsets and dominating performances. A few that I remember most were Wayne Catan of Syracuse earning a controversial victory over Iowa's Rico Ciparelli, and Lehigh's Peter Yazzo stealing one from Iowa State's Joe Gibbons. I remember Jude Skov, actually, from Ohio State, coming from the 6th seed to win it all, and his brother Luke finished 4th for Oklahoma State. After all these years, I also still remember an early round matchup between two former teammates at 134 pounds, 2nd-seeded Greg Randall of Iowa versus unseeded David Ray of Edinburgh. I can't remember the details of the match or how Randall came out with a 5-4 victory. I just remember the crowd coming to life and the appreciative applause also for the Fighting Scott as the dust cleared. Take me through that match specifically, and also your journey to your third place finish, which was the highest finish for any unseeded to participate in the entire tournament that year.
Well, I think I told you, losses are easy to remember. And I still remember that last few seconds of that match with Greg Randall. In fact, it was the 2nd round. At the very end, I was ahead 4-3. There was a few seconds left, less than 20 seconds. I thought I had a side headlock on him, which I used to do a lot back then, even in freestyle and stuff. And I thought, why can I hold on this? And I could feel him squirming out. And I'm thinking, hold on. And debating, or let go, let him have one and just turn and face him. And during that debating in my head, he slipped around and got around my leg. That side headlock was on the back side leg to him. And anyway, he got a reversal, and he grabbed my ankle and held on to it, and time expired. And anyway, that was about it. But, you know, I don't remember anything about the crowd, really, other than they were happy an Iowa guy won. And then I know that one thing. Gable did not coach in the corner. And I don't know why. I don't know if he thought, well, I didn't want to show, or if he just said, you know, I'm going to let both of them go at it. And Gable has always been good to me my whole life. Always treated me well. And after that loss, yeah, it's devastating. But, you know, I didn't come there just to quit. And so after that match, it was just one match at a time. And I ended up winning 6 in a row. I ended up going 7-1 in the tournament. I won my first one, lost my second one, then won 6 in a row to 3rd. You know, going to the Division I's first time taking 3rd, was that my goal? No. But, you know, to be honest, I knew I could have placed in it many times, and I just had to do the best I could. And then, you know, after 3rd, I was happy to be an All-American.
Your 2004 NAA National Championship team at Montana State Northern was quite a group. That team included 5 national champions, and among them is current Great Falls University head coach Caleb Schaefer and Hodge Trophy winner Emmett Wilson. Tell us a little bit about the team in particular and about Wilson, who remains the only non-NCAA winner of the Hodge, the Heisman Trophy of wrestling.
I had a lot of teams that were special, but that team was a lot of freshmen. There were seniors that year in 2004 that were from Montana. And, you know, it was not only Emmett Wilson on that team, but Dustin Azure, who's the head coach at Eastern Oregon. And Tyson used to be part of that, and he's the head coach at Northern now. But there was Kyle Fisher, who's from Haver, so he was a local. And there was Brent Riggin down the road a couple of miles, and there was Caleb Schaefer from Columbia Falls. So there was it was a team that reminded me of Iowa. The guys were confident, and I remember at Iowa, those guys would sit there and make a bet who was going to get the score the most points or who was going to get the fastest pin. They were very confident in themselves. And they probably had a right to be. They were winning duels and doing very well against everyone. But That team ended up having 6 finalists, 5 national champs. They ended up with that 5 champions. They ended up tying a 1958 record with Mankato State. I would say there's a lot of leaders in that group. Emmett Wilson, he led by example. He would say a few words, and Caleb was the same way. They believe that you just go out there and you lead by example by trying to kick your opponent's butt. But their confidence in all of them, especially Emmett's too, their confidence was, you know, unreal. Emmett would go out there and it was contagious. Strider Davis, I mean, he and Caleb, they all feed off each other. And I know most coaches out there that have ever, you know, when they coach, have ever had a team with had individuals like that, they know what I'm talking about. They feed off each other, and they're just very confident in themselves. We went on that year, and, you know, what a great year. I mean, you have Emmett Wilson, you have a few guys place at Vegas, and you have a few guys place at Midlands. But I remember Emmett going, went in Vegas, went on to, we traveled to Midlands. We'd always drive, and he ended up winning Midlands championships. They invited him to wrestle in the All-Star Duels at Northern Iowa, you and I that year, University of Northern Iowa. We won that weight class at the national tournament 7 consecutive years. Dirk Lords won it 4 years. Emmett won it the next 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, you had quite a run at Northern. In 12 years there, your teams collected 4 team titles and saw another 3 finish in the top, another 3 finish in the top 3. Only one team finished outside of the Elite 8. After the 2004-05 season, you moved on to Southern Illinois Edwardsville. What was your motivation for seeking a new challenge, and how difficult was it for you to leave Haver?
Out of my career, my life, I'd say my most enjoyable years as being a coach in a career were at Northern. And it was tough at the beginning, but, you know, you got to appreciate the good years. You got to have those rough years. And it was difficult, but when you're at a small school like that, you're doing all the fundraising yourself, even to pay for your assistant. And you're, a lot of times, I'm cleaning the mats because I was very particular how my mats are clean and things are in the locker room and vacuuming and all those kind of things. And you didn't have work-study students, because if you did have some of that money available, it seems like, you know, some of the other sports might have get them that needed it for recruiting. And so you're doing everything. And you know that. And then you also, at that time I was there, you had to teach 6 credits a semester. You know, one semester I would do 7, the next semester I would do 5. But you had to at least teach 12 credits a year. It just got wearing. And you get worn down. And then my wife, at that time, we started having children. At the end, all of a sudden now we have 3 there at the house. And I stayed home and visited them. It kept becoming more difficult going back to work. So I knew it was time to move on. I had a few former wrestlers, Emmett Wilson and Mike Lane. They both went to Alaska. They said, they knew I was talking about getting out. They said, you ought to come up here. So I talked to my wife. She wanted to get in administration and be a principal. And I said, hey, let's go to Alaska. They're always looking. You can get in. Somebody will hire you right away from up there. And so we went up to the job interview, and sure enough, she had like 3 offers, and she took one of them. And I became an itinerant counselor. I flew to 4 different villages. It was very interesting. Plus, I got to fly in a little, you know, 4, 5, 6-passenger plane. And we'd fly through real low and go along the Yukon River. And I'd hit 3 villages on the Yukon River. And so it was exciting. Well, yeah, in between, I was in Alaska for 2 years. I even was assistant coach for one of my former wrestlers, Mike Lane, at Kotzebue. Emmett came down. I went up there, and I was an athletic director, actually more of an activities director. And there it's totally different. You travel by plane. Well, then I learned about backhaul, like you do in semis. Well, if I sent a plane out with my athletes on, I wanted to make sure that plane was coming back with other athletes from another school coming back to our school, so that school would pay half and I'd pay half. Or we do 3 villages and we'd split it 1/3, 1/3. The best experience in Alaska, doing a lot of things. And my experience there at Kotzebue being an activities director was awesome. I was an assistant coach too, wrestling coach for Mike Lane, one of my former wrestlers. But then my wife, she got pregnant, and she's like, I'm not having the baby up here. So we went to Iowa, where he had a family business there in Des Moines and in Oklahoma City and Tulsa, trying to tie together. My brother was running it. He needed some help. And I said, well, I'll come and help it. Thank you, maybe about buying it or something. And all in all, same. So we were there in Prairie City, Monroe area, outside of Des Moines a little bit.
Sure.
And my wife was a principal, and I thought about getting coaching again. And after that first year working a business, I thought, man, you know what? I think I want to coach. I thought I was done after Northern, but then all of a sudden you get this itch. So Simpson College, where I first started my college career, I was an assistant coach at. And I went there for 2 years. I was there with Steve Weber. He's the one that brought me in there, talked me into coming in. So I came in there. And, you know, I was divorced, and my daughter lived in Chicago area, Naperville. And I thought I needed to get – I was there in Dodge City, because that's really my first coaching was high school, was in Dodge City. I was assistant there for 1 year.
Well, you've been all over the place.
Oh, yeah. And I was working there at a meatpacking plant and was assistant coach at the high school. But I wanted to get closer back to my daughter. I had to get closer to her because her mother went back to where she lived. So I thought, well, I'll go to Indianola. That, you know, it's a five-hour drive to there to walk on that right there in Illinois, right north of Chicago area. And I was assistant there. Well, he wasn't there. The next year, Bob Dara came in. So I got to work underneath the legendary Bob Dara. Yeah, he'll be 88 this December 9th. And he is a gem. Every kid, I see why everybody loves him. I was only with him a year. I love the guy, and he's just a great motivator. After I was done at Simpson, I went back to Iowa thinking about training, so I went back to Iowa to get my master's. Talked to Gable. I said, you know, I've got an itch. I think I want to compete now. And he said, well, if you're going to do that, I want you to do something else. He goes, so get my master's. And he goes, yeah. I go, well, I wanted to, but I didn't know if that would be right. He gave me a stipend every month to do that. So I went to Edwardsville, because after Iowa, I went in. I had two jobs. That's how it started. I had two possibilities. Either Simpson College, Division III, was they were looking for a new coach because Peterson retired, or go to, and I remember talking, or I had an interview at Southern Illinois, and I went to Southern Illinois, and because I went there, they offered a job, and I thought, wow, this would be neat, Division I. I'll be honest with you, hindsight, now after the 5 years, I wish I would have known. You don't know until you go there. I wish, you know, I've been to Simpson before there, and I think that would have been a better position for myself at that time in my career with children and everything.
Sure.
And the stability of the programs, and they're just going, because they were going in Southern Illinois, they were going from Division II to Division I. You couldn't compete at a national tournament like, you know, Division II Nationals or Division III, maybe a club Nationals. And so you can imagine the recruiting, how difficult it was trying to tell kids, come in here, yeah, you're going to miss 2 years of your red shirt and 2 years of your you won't be able to compete at a national NCAA national tournament until your last 2 years. So even, and the kids you're recruiting, a lot of kids only want to give up 1 year. Well, after my fifth year, I was making AD, he did tell me, he goes, you saved the program. He goes, Davey, you did a great job. You saved it. You know, you built her. And that was probably the best compliment. You know, you saved the program, and got people involved, giving again.
So you're retired from coaching now. What do you miss most about the day-to-day involvement with the sport?
I guess those relationships, those building bonds, and watching the kids compete. I mean, I love practice. I love watching them in there. But I would say even more is just not even coaching or anything, but just watching the young man go out and compete in tournaments. That is, I like that. I miss that part of it. And the traveling, I guess it's relationships, the whole thing. Not with the kids, the coaches, it's all that social interaction. That's probably what I miss most. But if I ever coach, I only did 4 years of high school, and I was assistant coach for all four different high schools. And I always thought, I coach. Kansas is where I'd want to coach, to coach, I'd be at a high school in Kansas. That's just because that's where it all started. And when I'm all done, I think someday that might be where it's at.
Well,
I'm sure
you'd be welcome with open arms for sure. So, what advice would you give, especially a young coach as they are starting out?
I was in the sauna, and Gable was in there, and we were talking about going to Northern, and he said, you know, he gave me two things of advice in there. And he said, and this is from his experience over the years, probably from the 87 and 86, 87, 88, those years. Don't get too close to your athletes. And he meant by don't get buddy-buddy. Don't lose that relationship that you're the coach, they're the student athlete. Don't do like some coaches do, and don't go party with them and lose that respect or that leadership. That was one thing. And the other thing he said to me, he goes, read your athletes. Read it. And he was talking about read them when you're in practice. And he goes, look at them. Look, see if they're full of energy, or they're ready to go, or they need a hard practice, or they look tired and look fatigued, or they look kind of burned out. That's what he meant. He meant read them. And I'll tell you what, that's very, very difficult to do when you're young. You know, you're 30, first coaching, and it's something you have to think about all the time, and you get better and better as you go through coaching. And the other thing was Jim Zaleski. I called him up one year. I was having problems with teams, you know, some guys on the team. And I said, man, I just want to kick them off. They're forgetting about the rest of the year. And he goes, David, he goes, every coach at the beginning of the year, there's only a certain number of teams. There might be five teams that have potential winning the national title. And he goes, on paper. He goes, but the team at the end of the year that's able to keep it together, keep kids eligible, keep kids healthy, keep kids from leaving or whatever, and all those, you know, I'm talking about all those sure. circumstances that can go in. He goes, the coach that's able to keep it all together, keep that potential at the beginning of the year, whichever coach is keeping the most of that together at the end of the year will have probably the best possibility of winning the national title. Because I had a couple of guys right then that were pretty good that were just tanking and even wanted to default in this tournament. I asked him, and what do you do with these kind of guys? And that's what he said. So I went to the other guys on the team that were losing faith in those individuals. And I said, you guys, those individuals are going to help you get those rings on your fingers. I know you're upset with them. You've lost a little respect for them. But you know those rings you want? They're going to help you get them. And so they sat there and kept them as team and still kept everybody together. We won the national title that year. And those two individuals, they still became All-Americans and helped us get that national championship.
So do you have any interests or hobbies that you're involved with?
Well, I kind of told you some of them. I have a lot of interests. My interests, I don't have anything that I have to do every day, but my main interests are my hobbies are probably, you know, doing things with my family. But we like snow skiing or snowboarding with my son. I love riding my four-wheeler ATVs, and the mountains are up everywhere. In Montana, you can ride four-wheelers on anywhere. You get a license, you can ride them anywhere in the state except the interstate. So any kind of, you can ride them from here up to the mountains. You can ride them on the paved roads, in town, everywhere. So I love riding my four-wheelers to the mountains, though, and just checking out and come across wildlife, you know, elk or stuff like that. We like rafting. We like doing a lot. I got a 14-foot raft and two kayaks even. And my family and my kids, we like getting outdoors and doing some rafting. I'd say probably one of my passion is probably going to some of the ranchers I met in Montana over the years. And I go out and ride horses and trail cows or moo cows or bulls and get on a horse and riding up there and in the mountains and over the through. I mean, it's kind of like some of those areas I go, it's like being in Ireland and I might be by myself. I might be with some people, but a lot of times I like doing it by myself, going there and trying to find these cows or in the brush and bringing them out and bring them to the rest of the herd. And I could do that all day, every day. And then my other hobby is probably, and doing all this stuff with my family is really important. But the other thing is I like going to the Division I Nationals, watching that. And I usually go with this friend from Minot, North Dakota, Dave Rockos. He's from Kansas originally, too. So it's Russell in high school, Goddard. And then with Great Falls and Montana State Northern, I go to their duels home and home. Like I even went up to Northern when they wrestled Iowa last year, not that far, 115 miles. I got 20-plus in high school wrestling or coaching, a few in clubs even. I got Carl Valley, who's one of my wrestlers. He's over in Iowa, right there, Clear Lake, and it's called Club Valley. I got three coaches that are head wrestling coaches at college level NEI institutions. So I follow them and talk to them. And so it's busy. You know, it seems like you're talking, and some days I'll have three guys on a Sunday, three of my former athletes will call me up. And then there'll be another one. And so I, you know, I've been very fortunate. So keeping in contact and dealing with a lot of them is pretty neat.
So you maybe kind of have already answered this, but you've lived in a number of different places. What has been your favorite and why?
I'd say for the state I had the most experience for outdoors would be Alaska. I mean, I could have stayed there and travel and do that. Travel, I mean, my first year there, I traveled on a snow machine from Fairbanks to Kotzebue, 800 miles. Wow. I would like to travel across country, no cattle guards, no barbed wire fence, no any kind of fence. Travel on Tano River, down the Yukon River, up through the Pendant, through Hoosier, through Silhouette, through all these villages until we got to Kotzebue. 800 miles on a snow machine. And we were three of us, Emmett Wilson and Mike Lane. That was the other two guys, two former wrestlers. And we had two sleds pulling 80 gallons of gas. On the other sled, we had our tent and all of our dry foods and everything else. And it was like anywhere from probably 10 below to 20-some below. Probably the warmest it got would not have been zero. We're traveling on the rivers and everything. They're still frozen. This was in end of March. To go on and on about Alaska, but we don't have time for that. But that would probably be my favorite. My second love, since I can't live in Alaska and get my wife to go back there, is Montana. I love the outdoors that you said is my hobbies. And the things I like doing outdoors, visit the mountains. It just, there's nothing more refreshing to go to an area and you're by yourself on a four-wheeler or whatever, and a horse, and you're sitting there, and there's an elk and a calf, you know, a cow and a calf, and you're just watching in the woods, and nobody else around.
Do you have anything? We covered quite a bit of ground here. Do you have anything else to add?
Probably not. I the only thing I could say is probably to those coaches out there, I was really intense, and I'd be tough on my guys when they came off the match when I was younger, 31, and they'd lose. I wanted to win. As I got more into it, I wanted to win more than them. I thought I did. And I realized, you know, there was another coach who told me, I learned that Jack Spates told me, I was in one of the coaches that was honorary coaches for the, I think it was the 2000 All-Star Duels at Michigan State. I was on the side with fortunate with Kel Sanderson. He was like, I was going to coach him or anything, but I was in his corner and I had that team. But I remember Jack Spates telling me, as we were riding back to the airport, and he goes, you know, David, just remember, your guys go out, when your kids lose, they don't compete to lose. It's just part of the process. And it made me think, yeah, I can't be so hard on them, be negative to them. I need to remember that, yeah, when he's got, one of my kids, you aren't going out to lose. You're just, we didn't prepare properly or other reasons, or maybe you didn't have confidence in yourself or whatever. Not to be so tough on them. Be a little more compassionate. And that really changed me as coaching when they come off. Remember that my kid, he didn't go out there to lose, but, you know, and he wanted to win. Maybe there was a lot of different factors why it didn't happen, but that was my job as a coach to figure out and to find out so we could turn that around.
All right, well, thanks for taking the time to visit about your career and other things as well. Kansas is fortunate to call you one of their own. We'll look forward to honoring you on October 8th at the 2016 Fall Clinic and Hall of Fame Induction Banquet. Thanks again.
Thank you very much, Patrick, and thank you for the interview and the induction. I'm looking forward to it. After I got out of coaching, I've never found a job that I'd like as much as my time at Northern. And When you find something that you're just passionate, it was great, and you're trying to replace it or try to find it, how? Yeah, I tell you what, you get.
Yeah, yeah.
My wife had to put up with me, let me put it that way. And Iowa had a recruiting coordinator. His name was Mark, tall guy. Yeah, I can't believe it. He's the first contact I ever had. He would do all the letters, do everything, and Gable, I'm sure he just did them all and had Gable sign them. I promise you. Uh-huh. And Gable probably wouldn't like to hear that, but he probably agreed. Saying you think I'm so old that I wouldn't know what Skype is.
Hey, you read right between the lines, didn't you?